Hello, listeners, both new and long-term. Quick note, Elise and I have finally launched our Patreon podcast. It's called We Couldn't Help But Wonder, Still Wondering. You can find it on the Patreon website and find an easy link through our website, wecouldn'thelpbutwonder.com. To those who have already subscribed, our deepest thanks, and to those who haven't yet, come check us out. For only $4 a month, we'll be breaking down a new romantic comedy set in New York City in 3 or 4 episodes, with the same humor and detail we've brought to over 100 episodes of this podcast. All 4 episodes of When Harry Met Sally are out, and we're halfway through You've Got Mail. We're really excited to share this new series with you. All right, here's the show.
Hi, Mike Jensen.
Hey, Elise Castle. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Butthole down real quick before we get into this. I can't believe we missed this when we were talking about the Birkins last week. We completely forgot about Coulda, Woulda, Shoulda, the episode where Samantha was getting the Birkin bag and really wanted one, and the waiting list was 5 years long, and she went through Lucy Liu, like, used her name to get it.
To be clear, I did not forget about it. I just didn't bring it up.
Oh. Well, I forgot about it, and I was talking to my friend Jake, who listens to the podcast, and he brought it up, and, like, there's another moment today that's also kind of a throwback to, I just think they may be sprinkling in these, like, old SATC things, maybe not.
I can see that. So, anyways, we're here today to talk about Alive! Sorry, there's an exclamation point at the end of it, I feel like I had to say it loud.
Thank you.
This is once again directed by Michael Patrick King, written by Julie Rottenberg and Alisa Zaritsky. You know what I haven't said a single time since we've been doing And Just Like That? This episode first premiered on July 6th, 2023.
And you haven't been giving DVD recaps, lazy.
That's very true. Yeah, sorry about the DVD recaps. And we open at a restaurant with a million pastries on the bar. Did you notice how many pastries there were on this bar?
Shockingly, I didn't. That usually would be the first thing I clock.
I took a picture, and I will, I'll send a picture, because there's so many pastries. It's insane. And I just want to point out really quickly, no one seems to have COVID.
Right. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about in our last episode when we were saying how things don't always carry over, no pun intended.
Gotcha, yeah. No pun intended.
Into the next episode. Yeah, is that nobody seems to have COVID. I did notice that the salt and pepper shakers were pretty full at this restaurant, which is Le Adresse. It's L'Adresse. Nomad. It's on 1184 Broadway.
Okay, cool. I don't think I've been here. 1184 Broadway. I should walk by that.
Mm-hmm. You should.
Interesting. Carrie is shocked that Jackie said yes to breakfast.
And Jackie seems to be hesitant about breakfast. Jackie doesn't strike me as a breakfast person. Like the time.
Well, I think that Jackie is not a morning person.
Right. I didn't necessarily mean the food. I meant the time.
I just think, well, it made me think about me, because I would almost never say yes to breakfast, but it's not, I mean, on one hand, I do tend to sleep in late, but also, like, I have a routine in my morning that, like, I'm not really available to leave my apartment until afternoon, because, like, I get up and have breakfast, and then I work out first, and showering, and all of that, so I understand Jackie's reluctance to go to breakfast.
I don't think Jackie's reluctance to go to breakfast has anything to do with his morning routine.
Other than getting out of bed, perhaps.
Yeah. I don't think Jackie has the one.
And Carrie's keeping a promise that he probably doesn't even remember her making, and that's basically just that she signed a copy of her book for him.
Yeah, and then real quickly, Jackie gets the shits.
So, this is a strange line, because he broke his rule about hollandaise before. This doesn't seem like a before noon issue. This seems like he just shouldn't have hollandaise issue.
Yeah, he shouldn't maybe introduce his stomach to food for the first time today with a hollandaise sauce, mayhaps.
It did look really good.
It did.
That Benedict looked delicious.
Yeah, and I was a little confused. Okay, I guess it makes sense now that I'm kind of thinking about it. Like, why did Jackie need to be here for this? But I guess to introduce the fact that Carrie's book is out, to introduce the fact that it's in print and that people are getting copies of it, and so she can be in a public place so that the next scene can happen.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup for the rest of the scene, which is, you know, Carrie being left behind and getting a message from Marlon Schaefer. Oh, I meant to call this number. You didn't call the number, did you?
I looked it up. I didn't call it, though.
We're recording with our phones, so we can't actually call it right now, but we'll have to try it later.
Well, I looked it up, and it is the New York... It's one of the many phone numbers available for the New York State DMV.
Oh, okay.
Which
All right.
feels strange that they would use that. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. And then, you know, we have an Enid spotting in the background there.
Yes, we see Candy Bergen, Enid, and did you notice this background actor. It's the first actor on the left. I thought it was Sean Hayes for a second.
That's funny. I feel like I might have noticed that as well. Like, I did have a moment of like, do I know that person?
Yeah, there's two gentlemen sitting at a bar, and I was like, oh, Sean Hayes. Never mind. I mean, maybe it was. No, it's not. But
I like that Carrie does a triple take. You definitely get the feeling that Enid maybe doesn't want to be seen, but if she really didn't want to be seen, she could have just walked out of the restaurant.
Right. She instead just like strolls by staring at Carrie.
Yeah, and kind of slows down. And then, yeah, I like SJP's, like, literally does a triple take and realizes that it's Enid. And, you know, it's sort of that thing of, like, do they want to see each other or not? And Enid saying that she couldn't bring herself to say hello.
Well, I felt terrible about what happened to your husband. And then I was mortified that I hadn't written a condolence card.
That's okay. It's okay.
The truth is, I had my own death. I'm sure you heard.
My God, no. Who did you lose?
Me, after 34 years at Vogue, and then 6 years before that at Mademoiselle, may she rest in peace, Condé Nast gave me the golden parachute, if you can believe it, me.
No, honestly, I can't. But if it helps to hear, I'm really enjoying your Ask Enid newsletter. I mean, you must know, it's wildly popular.
She got the golden parachute, which I was not familiar with that term. But it basically means a severance.
Yeah, I am familiar with that because that's what everyone like at Goldman Sachs got when they basically, you know, stole everyone's money and then got $15 million retirement contracts. For the record, am I the only person who like desperately wants to retire? I would retire tomorrow if I could retire. I feel like all we have are TV shows about people that like just want to keep working.
I think it depends on the person. I think it depends on what they're going through. Maybe if you were in your 70s, you may feel different. You may feel like, okay, I want to keep doing the thing. And Carrie lets Enid know that she is enjoying her Ask Enid newsletter, and Enid is quick to tell her that it is rivaling Goop.
Yeah, I'm also confused by this because I don't subscribe to that kind of thing. So do you subscribe to a newsletter from Goop? Is that how it works?
I mean, there's different things, right? So there's like Substack, which is a way to subscribe to newsletters and things like that. Also, there are subscriptions, you know, you can subscribe to on the internet. But even just the readership, like she could say, is rivaling Goop, and maybe she gets advertising. And
gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
At this point, I realized that Enid, I shouldn't say I realized, I was reminded that Enid is pretty selfish.
Yes, and quite prickly, as Carrie says that she sent an email, and I like that for a minute Enid says she didn't get it, but then, you know, pretty quickly is like, yes, I did get it. You wanted me to write a blurb, and the blurb ship has sailed. And Carrie sort of brings up, well, if you were to mention the book, you know how hard publishing is right now. And Enid's thought of like, well, if I mention your book, I have to mention everybody's book, which is for sure not how it works.
And I like when Carrie goes, does everyone have a book? And Enid said, well, I don't. And this scene reminded me of in the original series when Enid was so mad about someone else having a man around Enid's age.
That was Carrie.
Yeah. And Enid is very much like, if I don't have it, no one can. That's her attitude.
But she's having a thought. She's launching an online magazine focused on women our age, a term she uses three times.
Mm-hmm. And it's called Vivant. And Carrie seems a bit taken aback. And this inspired me to research their actual ages.
Same.
Sarah Jessica Parker is 58. Candace Bergen is 77.
Which, that is a different age
it
group.
It is.
That is not, that is, so perhaps she simply means women over, say, 50. But yeah, it's lumping a two-decade age gap together, which, you know, okay. I also feel like, I don't know how I feel about an online magazine for senior ladies. Doesn't seem like a gold mine to me, but maybe I don't know the demographic well enough. And she wants Carrie to get involved, but pretty quickly into saying this, you know, she gets a phone call from her beau and is off.
Mm-hmm. Then we cut to all of the Upper East Side are leaving for camp outside of the Park Avenue Armory.
Yeah, I thought that looked familiar. And they're going to be gone for 4 weeks. I never did anything I think maybe this was for rich people.
Camp, I don't necessarily know. I think it is more of a New York thing. Because I was talking to my boyfriend who grew up in New York and is Jewish. And, you know, he was like, yeah, I went to camp. Everyone went to camp. Like, so I think it's more common in New York City. So your kids get a chance to, like, go away and
which makes sense.
Be in nature.
I understand. I think that I did a 1 week scout camp when I was a teenager, but that was all.
Yeah, I never did sleepaway camp. I did Vacation Bible School a few times, and I had marching band camp, which was just a way of saying very long rehearsals. But yeah, I never went away to something.
And LTW is 95% sure that she packed Gabby's retainer.
And her son, whose name I can't remember, is 95% sure he packed his toothbrush.
His deodorant.
Same thing. We're learning teenage boys are gross.
Yeah. And Charlotte sort of asked what they're going to do with all their free time. And they're going to work. LTW and Herbert are going to work. They're looking forward to that. Her film got into Tribeca. He's doing some pro bono work, which I think is worth mentioning because it's something they probably could mention later in the episode and don't. And Charlotte and Harry are going to work as well. And they want to get off to start working right away.
So at first I was confused because Charlotte and Harry.
I was as well.
Because they were like, Charlotte and Harry have things, is what they said. And I thought maybe they were ashamed because maybe Harry's not working as much and Charlotte isn't working. But then I realized, no, they are definitely about to do it. And LTW yells to not forget their 20th anniversary party, and quickly Herbert is like, yeah, they're gonna do it. I've never seen Harry run.
Yeah. And I, you know, Lisa's saying that she invited her dad to the party, which of course she would invite her dad to the party, but this is just to establish that her father and his mother Eunice do not get along.
Yeah. Have you learned nothing from Gabby's baptism? I'd like to know what happened at Gabby's baptism.
Yeah. Also, Eunice, maybe, I know we have admiration for the character, but I do need her to calm down often.
Yes.
So we hear a thrumming. I did not know what this noise was. It was like, what is happening? As Miranda gets up from the couch.
And at first I thought it was Brady, like, doing it upstairs.
That's what I was wondering. Which I was like, going to be a sex thing.
Yeah, I was going to be very uncomfortable with that. I don't know if you noticed, but Miranda's reading Carrie's book, or at least has it
it's
next
funny,
to her.
I didn't notice that, but I have heard it mentioned.
Yes. And we go upstairs. Steve is boxing. He doesn't care. He looks very good without his blouse on.
Yeah, I liked that. So the motivation for this all came from the negative reaction that was had in the first season towards Steve and people feeling like he had become sort of a passive, almost, I think to use, I think that they used the term handicapped, I think, on the podcast with Michael Patrick King, that he just seemed so like he was going deaf and he was not in control of anything. And they wanted for the first time that we saw Steve for him to be in really good shape, working out with his shirt off to show that, like, no, Steve is still
Steve.
Yeah, he's still Steve.
Now, I didn't notice any hearing aids or hard of hearing.
I didn't either. Okay. Maybe they're just like, we're not going to talk about that this season, okay. Perhaps. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, they definitely wanted to put him in more of a, you know, quote unquote masculine frame of mind or sensibility, perhaps. And they have to be somewhere at 1 and do these headphones work.
And he's like, obviously not if I can still hear you. I think it's weird. I think noise canceling headphones are weird. I get how they are helpful in some situations, and I get how they can be helpful for people who don't like loud sounds. Like, I understand all that. And I guess maybe even in this situation where your parents are divorced and weird sounds are happening. I don't know. I just like to be somewhat aware of what's going on.
They can't be 100% noise canceling, can they? Like, you don't want to completely cancel any outside noise, like, say, a car racing towards you or something.
That's what I mean. There are headphones that are like that. So
that feels insane.
Yeah, that's why I get a little bit weary of those. I understand wearing headphones because it's more comfortable, you know, if you're sensitive to loud sounds or like trying to sleep or living in the city. But when they're really noise canceling, I get a little bit nervous.
And I just wrote, we are terrible to our moms.
He's a teenager.
Yeah, I know. But I feel like I sometimes think about like the tone that we use with our parents from time to time. And we find out they have therapy. Is that what's established here? Is that they have family therapy starting at 1. And Miranda gets a text from Che, who is in Houston and will see her Friday. And I was very confused at first. I didn't know if Miranda was going to Houston. I was thrown by the storyline, but it will all make sense as we go along.
Yeah, and Miranda definitely still has that giddy excitement when she gets the text from Che. It's interesting. She has, yeah, that smirk when she gets the text from Che, but anger around Steve. And then we cut to Seema and Carrie. They're at Poppy, which is a cafe on 20 East 69th Street. Carrie's hat is giving me, like, Revolutionary War, maybe?
Well, Carrie asks Seema if she presents as a 75-year-old retiree, and I wrote, the hat maybe does.
Yeah, it's giving me, like, Paul Revere. like reverse, because usually I think the point is in the front with those hats, But it's Chanel, I believe.
Think so. And I'm a little obsessed with Seema's earring. Did you notice her earring that was like maybe an F? It was a very...
I did not. I'll have to go back and look.
Oh, it was an aggressive earring. And a lot happens here. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of conversation where, you know, part of it, we find out that Carrie just started a second book of a 3-book deal. That's kind of a big deal for us to know. And that friends call her dude. So Seema calls her dude.
And then Seema finds out that it's for Enid Frick. And she's like, oh my gosh, I love Enid. I'll buy anything she tells me to do.
Yeah, we have to start this whole conversation over. Do you subscribe to Ask Enid? And the idea that the no about mentioning the book is just the start of a negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, Carrie gets another text and finds out that it's not a wrong number text. A little birdie gave this gentleman her number.
Yes. And this man is asking Carrie if she wants to take a spin on Saturday. Seema says, you know, oh, he's gorgeous, but talking about the car or beautiful.
And then we cut to Richard Burton watching Harry and Charlotte having sex.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah. Harry and Charlotte are having sex and poor Richard Burton doesn't want to see it.
And Charlotte makes an offer.
Yeah. I wrote, Charlotte asks Harry to, you know, and it's not even his birthday.
And she gets out the tissue and then asks him if he just faked an orgasm.
Where is it?
Because, yeah, there's no evidence of the climax that he just experienced. And I wrote Four Ladies at Lunch, mm-hmm. You know what I mean. And Charlotte is explaining what happened and that the orgasm was very present and powerful. And how did you make this discovery? And it was a special treat because the kids are away. Okay, I love Carrie in this scene so much. Like, all of her reactions are so perfect. Like, when Charlotte says that it was a special treat because the kids are away, and she just gives a little aw. It's so good.
This scene felt very old Sex in the City.
For sure. Yes, absolutely. And Miranda's comment that jizz-free sex sort of sounds like an upgrade and that Carrie had never given it a thought until this moment.
Yeah. Jizz. Jizz.
Jizz. And I liked that the writers were talking about how one of the writers thinks that jizz is like the funniest mm-hmm. word in the world and so wanted Carrie to say it, but sort of talks about how, like, SJP is very protective of Carrie as a character and thinks there are things that she would say and things that she wouldn't. And there was a little bit of nervousness, like, is Sarah Jessica going to think this is funny? And that I don't think the word jizz was written 4 times in the script, but SJP thought it was funny and so sort of ran with it.
Yeah, and there's the line about Casper the Friendly Cum, and apparently yes. That was also something that was on the original board of the writer's room for Sex in the City, and they never got around to using it.
Yeah, so they got to bring it up here.
Now, the thing that I did think of when I was watching this was the episode of Sex in the City, Easy Come, Easy Go, with Samantha and the man with the funky spunk. And I went back and watched the scene because Charlotte has definitely had a change of heart when it comes to this, because that scene I loved
for
so
sure.
much, because Samantha just says he had funky spunk and Charlotte says nothing, gets up and just walks away yeah. from the table. And also in that scene, Miranda makes a comment that Seaman to her, it's not like Baskin Robbins. So she's not lying. She never really has been the hugest fan of it, but Charlotte has definitely had a change of heart.
True story. Guess what episode of Sex and the City I was watching right before we started recording today?
Easy Come, Easy Go?
Yep, and I'll talk about why later. But okay. I literally was just watching that episode and was like, oh, funky spunk.
Yeah, and I just love that moment. She just gets up and leaves.
Yeah, and she's never coming back.
Yeah, and no one really cares. They're just like, yeah, that's what Charlotte does. So I just kind of love that she came around. I love seeing Miranda here. Charlotte is really Samantha-ing. Like, she's still talking like Charlotte, but using Samantha script.
And Carrie compares it to an old friend that gets on your nerves. She thinks that she would miss it if it was gone. And Anthony calls Miranda Rachel Maddow. Okay.
Anthony says the technical term is dust balls.
And then asks for mayo.
And Miranda has never been a fan of mayo, which is, sorry, I keep going back to that episode because I watched the scene. In that episode too, Carrie makes the comment in Easy Come, Easy Go, Carrie makes the comment to cancel the rice pudding. So
yes.
It's kind of, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of throwback in this scene for sure with that scene. And they're at Rosemary's on 18 Greenwich Avenue.
And Charlotte thinks of it as the confetti or the finale at the fireworks on the 4th of July. That was a lot of Fs that I just said. And Carrie loves her so much right now. I just love it. I love this scene. Yeah, it's a glorious throwback. It feels so, like, purely Sex in the City. But of now, you mm-hmm. know, and even calling Charlotte a cum slut.
Yes, and Anthony says that's her new name in his phone. I'm like, all right, he's going to change it from Mrs. Up the Butt.
Yep, and then the children arrive.
Yeah, there they are.
And we have Herbert and LTW out having espresso martinis at the Mark Bar. The Mark Bar does not list espresso martinis as a cocktail that they serve, but I'm sure you can still ask for one.
Yeah, I feel like you have to at this point. All people do is order espresso martinis. All day.
And they're, you know, the drinks here are moderately expensive. The $22 to $39, there was a margarita for $39, which is a pricey margarita, to be clear.
Yeah, this is the bar at the Mark Hotel on 77th Street.
At which you can get a hotel room for as little as $8.95 a night.
I'm not sure if the bar is as well, but I know the restaurant is a Jean Georges restaurant, and they do a very beautiful outdoors Christmas display.
And the reason why I was watching Easy Come Easy Go is because for some reason they look nothing alike, so I had no right thinking this, but for some reason the setup of this bar in the hotel reminded me of the setup of the bar where Carrie meets Big right before their affair starts, which is in that episode Easy Come. They're not, I mean, to be clear, it's four blocks away, and that hotel that they meet at in Easy Come Easy Go is not a hotel anymore. It's now just a residential building. But so they're in the same neighborhood, not at all the same, which as soon as I saw the scene, I'm like, oh yeah, no, these are very, very different bars. But that's actually why I was watching it, because it reminded me of that.
Yeah, so we find out that LTW walked by the Mark Kasabian Gallery and wants him to come to the anniversary party. Mark Kasabian is not a real person.
But he's going to be a real character.
He will be a real character.
And she walked by it because she was on her way from FedExing the retainer to her daughter. So the 5% had been the truth. And yeah, Herbert handled the invitations. We have a lot, once again, a lot of information that's being given out that Herbert has decided not to run for comptroller.
What is with Sex and the City and comptrollers?
I think it's just like a position one can run for that isn't, say, like the mayor. So it's okay. A thing that can be not as big of a deal. Yes, we have had someone running for comptroller before on this show.
I just never knew what it was before this show, and now I feel like
I still don't know what it is.
And now I feel like it's the fifth lady at this point.
Sure. And should they order two more espresso martinis? They haven't really finished the first ones, but okay. And we get Harry and Charlotte at the doctor's office. There's nothing to worry about, but he does break out a power bar, which I think is just to make this conversation even more absurd than it already feels.
Yeah, and this doctor's office is very fancy. It looks like they're at a law office to discuss doctor's results.
I'm sure they have very good coverage.
I know, but when have you ever been to a doctor where they're like, okay, now we're going to get you fully clothed. We're all going to go in this super fancy office and sit down. I don't know. Maybe.
You could have ended that sentence at, when did you ever go to a doctor?
Mike!
And we talk about dry orgasms or retrograde ejaculations, and that your semen went into your bladder instead of your penis. And I did feel uncomfortable to use last week's phrase down there for this entire conversation.
I wrote, the mayo went into the bladder.
Okay, sure. And his muscles are not well coordinated with his pelvic floor. And I like his comment of like, do I have one of those?
Yeah, and Charlotte wants to learn to redirect traffic. And Dr. Chang asks Harry if he knows what legals are, but no. If he knows what a Kegel is, and Harry makes a Kugel joke.
I don't even know what those are.
What, Kegel or Kugel?
Kugel. I know what a Kegel is. I'm practicing mine right now.
It's a noodle pudding.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's usually, I believe it's usually savory, but it's very popular in Jewish cuisine.
And Charlotte is an expert, so we cut to a workout and squeeze the sphincter, but not your butthole.
Mm-hmm. And which is like holding in a fart.
Which he already knows how to do.
Yeah, and Richard Burton is again like, why am I here?
Yeah, we have a lot of Richard Burton in the background of scenes, which I get it, he's a cute dog. Mm-hmm. And think of your penis as the elephant's trunk slurping from the river. And Charlotte is not impressed with his slurping.
Mm-mm.
And she takes his hand to show hers, and it's a steel trap down there.
Yeah. I did like this scene, though, too. It felt very Charlotte.
It's fun, yeah. And like, it's Charlotte's version of taking something seriously, which is then also her making the rhyme and Harry saying the rhyming helps. And she's like, oh, good.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's a lovely, funny little scene.
1, 2, 3, 4, slurp that sperm from the pelvic floor.
It's pretty good. And we're at therapy. And it took me a minute with this actress, Adina Versin. She's probably most popular from Only Murders in the Building. But I know her from the original cast of Paula Vogel's Indecent on Broadway.
Oh!
And my connection to that play is simply that our friend Ben Cherry was the male swing. He covered every single male role in the show. And the amount of time, not to make it about me, the amount of time I spent with him running lines and like running blocking, that like when I went to see the play, I was like, this is what we've been doing this whole time. And I saw it several times, and I've watched the version that was on PBS. So that's where I actually know her the best from, is from Indecent.
Well, I've seen her then. I just didn't recognize her from that because I only saw it once in the balcony. And we find out again that it's been 3 weeks. So, and just like that is a very 3 week intervaled show.
Yeah. And Brady's done talking about his breakup. He wants to talk about his parents' breakup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're trying to keep their stuff separate, but he wants to know if they're separating or not. Like, what's going on?
Right. And we find out that Brady is heavily medicated.
He's not heavily medicated. I liked that moment as well.
Yeah, and they say, well, can I have some more?
Yeah, Brady's kind of a brat, but, you know, he is of a certain age. And, you know, Miranda's clearly holding her tongue, and Brady calls her out for it. This isn't who she is. And the therapist seems to think they need a more permanent solution so that there is consistency. And Miranda says that she should find a place.
Then Steve says...
And Steve basically says that, yeah, he will instead.
Yeah. No, I'll find a place closer to Scout. It's my bar.
Closer to the bar. Yeah.
And Miranda says thank you.
Yeah. And Brady has another announcement.
He's not going to start college in the fall. And Steve says, whatever you need. And Miranda says she has nothing to say.
Yeah, you can see that her head is about to explode.
And then you fast forward to Carrie and Miranda in an elevator where Miranda has so much to say.
Yes. This is not a kid who self-motivates. And why didn't you say anything? And this is their silent agreement because she's the one that blew up their lives. So... he's not allowed to punch her in the face, which I'm hoping is a metaphor, mm-hmm. and she can't take up more space than the couch.
Well, I think that was just kind of throwing it back to the fact that he has that punching bag.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Once again. And the door opens and it's not who they think it's going to be. It's Lyle.
Lyle, he's there.
I didn't know you'd still be here.
In this moment, all I really thought about was, so Miranda and Che have talked about Lyle,
yes,
and Che's marriage.
Things are fine. Yeah. And they're fine. Like, they've at least made up to a place where, like, they are still together and things don't seem to be at all tense. They seem to be doing just fine. And we're on page 42 of the IKEA catalog.
Mike loves building IKEA furniture.
It's all that I wanted to do was be like, get out of my way. I'm going to build all of that
stuff.
Yes.
And what I was thinking is, and it's, you know, we find out that this apartment is in Hudson Yards. We find out that this is an upgrade from a walk-up. We find out Hudson Yards, for those of you not in New York City, is like a newer built area on the west side.
It's kind of like the newest neighborhood in Manhattan, where it used to be Hudson Yards, used to be train station, and they've redone it as a luxury. Does anyone live? I can't imagine anyone living,
yes,
in Hudson
Yards.
Yes,
a lot of people do. But they're very expensive luxury buildings. And so they've made all of these comments about Che moving up, luxury, all of these things. So why did Che buy all of this IKEA furniture?
Yeah, it felt Che to me, though. It felt, though, even though they are in a nicer building and a nicer apartment, that they would just want the ease of just, like, ship everything in from IKEA, I'll put it together. Mm. Maybe they like putting things together as much as I do.
Maybe.
And we have an if my TV show goes, when your TV show goes, which I also am like, maybe don't buy the apartment until your TV show goes.
Chase says, I will have no problem subletting it for more than I pay, which... is also very Che.
And now I'm part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So Che's going to show Miranda the bedroom, and Carrie says, just show her. I'm only here for one drink.
And Carrie was waiting for someone to introduce.
Oh, yeah. I did like that moment, too. And it's like, I keep thinking someone's going to introduce us. That was very fun. Mm-hmm. And Lyle asks Carrie what her story is, but she's more interested in the story of the guy who has a ring on every finger.
Before this, I was just thinking, like, Miranda... quit leaving Carrie behind to go have sex with Che. Last time you had one job and it was to watch your friend with her hip replacement, and you went to the kitchen and had sex with Che, and Carrie peed herself. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Miranda could stand to be a little more attentive.
Well, anyway, the other thing too that I noticed is when Carrie makes the comment about Lyle having all the rings, Lyle's response is that he used to be a Beverly Hills hairdresser. My first
yes.
thought was, and this is just because I used to know this man who was married, and it wasn't a good relationship, and he would wear rings on all of his fingers so that people didn't know he was married. So like the
shady.
Yeah. So like the wedding ring didn't stand out at all. So for some reason, that was the first thing that came into my mind. So I thought maybe Lyle is going to say like, oh, I'm still married to Che and I don't have the heart to take it off. So I just decorate the rest.
Well, I do think it's funny how he says I was married to Che for 2 years. And I'd be like, no, you've been married to Che this whole time. So it's been more than 2 years. You were maybe only actively married for 2 years.
And also, I think it would be hard to be a hairdresser with all those rings. They would get caught in the hair.
I didn't get the relevance of it. But in the bedroom, Miranda is saying she didn't think that Lyle would still be here. And I, you know, Che makes a very good point.
I guess I didn't think that Lyle would still be here.
Do you think he'd drive me in his truck all the way from LA to Hudson Yards?
Load up all my new shit from IKEA. Swing by my old place. Get my clothes. Turn around and drive 3,000 miles back.
Oh, shit, that was loud.
Okay. I guess when you put it that way, I just miss being with you.
Did you think that Lyle was going to drive all the way here, do all this stuff, and then I'd be like, bye?
And I guess Miranda just didn't really think about it. And we find out that Lyle will be on the couch that night.
And in the kitchen, Lyle is doing some name dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 2010, and we get a Che Lyle origin story that Che was going to be performing in a program called Funny Latina Ladies on Showtime. This made me laugh because it reminds me of the HBO programs that used to be for comedians. And I think about, oh gosh, I think it was Rita Rudner, which is showing you my childhood sense of humor, that she was talking about doing, that her first program had been Ladies of the Night, and now she was doing a program called A One Night Stand, and her next program would be called Sluts Tell Jokes. Which that's all that I thought of when I heard Funny Latina Ladies.
And I could be reading into this way too much about me trying to find like symbolism and everything. But there was a part of me that was like, oh, Miranda is on the couch at her home. And now Lyle has to be on the couch at Che's. I don't know.
Oh, it's a connection. Basically, an agent told Che to lose the flowing Carrie Underwood hair. And I think this is also just to show us what a different person Che perhaps was then. Mm-hmm. And we get a, I gave the shag and then we shagged and we, you know, we get a shampoo reference, which is a film that I've never seen.
And then we see Carrie doing some work with the Solo cups. She's like writing people's names on them. Well, we heard this in Michael Patrick King's podcast too, that, you know, giving Che this almost bachelor pad style vibe with, of course, Che wouldn't have cups yet.
Which makes me crazy because I have so much glassware. But yeah, it was the idea of it sort of being also like a dorm room and that they wanted to get them on the bed, which is why immediately when they go and sit on the couch breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And we go from that to the anniversary party and the perhaps Charlotte and Harry are the first to arrive, though Eunice wants it to be known that she was there first.
And they are at a fictional restaurant called Dulcimer. That's
yes, all. This one does not exist. And they rented the whole place, which feels like a bit much. I think they could just rent that one little room there.
Well, if you have that much money, why not? And then Mark Kasabian shows up.
You know, I have been a tiny bit fearful that it wasn't going to be Victor Garber after I made such a deal about recognizing from the trailer. So I was very relieved in this moment to go, oh, okay, good. It is in fact Victor Garber.
Yes, and he sold LTW the Amy Sherald. Amy is an American painter. Her work is described as being a portraitist depicting African Americans in everyday settings.
So there are so many interesting pretend people mixed with real people.
Yes.
In so much of this scene that I think it's interesting to like talk about who is, because then he talks about having worked on the Jim Stahl installation, and it's spelled on closed captioning S-T-A-L-L, and I could not find an artist by that name, but there is a Jim Stahl S-T-A-L-L.
A-H-L?
Yeah, so I don't know if they're really referencing that particular person.
The only reason I don't know...
Yeah, it was an interesting mix.
Yeah, the only reason I don't know if they're referencing that person is because his work seems to be, like, very
nature-based. Yes.
And I don't know, based on the other stuff that Mark Kasabian is talking about, it seems more like modern art, if that work would be in the same galleries, yeah. But I could be wrong.
So it's interesting. And then we have a reference to perhaps everyone is stuck in traffic, which also gave me vibes of the original Sex and the City when everyone was stuck in traffic going to Carrie's birthday.
Yep.
And I wrote, Eunice is awful.
Yeah. She just wants an hors d'oeuvre. And LTW's dad arrives, right?
Yeah, it's Billy Dee Williams.
There we go.
Like, what? How? What? How did we not? Wow. Hey, it's Lando Calrissian himself.
Yes. And I did recognize him because I have seen many a Star Wars.
I also think it's funny on his IMDb page that certainly his most repeated role is the role of Lando Calrissian. But his second most repeated role most certainly is Billy Dee Williams. Because he often plays himself in things.
Okay.
Like, that's just the legend that he is. And I wrote, right after that, I wrote again, Eunice is awful.
Yeah.
I don't like her in this episode, even kind of. The sheen is lost at this point.
Yeah. Well, she's not very nice to the servers, and she doesn't
want
them...
she's terrible to everybody.
She doesn't want them to keep passing her that same hors d'oeuvre. And the interesting thing about this situation, I want to let you all know who are not servers or have never had to cater a party. It is awful to pass around past hors d'oeuvres when no one is taking the past hors d'oeuvres.
Passing hors d'oeuvres, I don't recognize passing drinks as even a thing that should be legal to do, so I'm not putting that in this. Passing hors d'oeuvres is so awful. It's such an awful, awful job. Be nice and just say no thank you. Even if they offer it to you a second time, they don't remember you necessarily. Just say thank you.
And they also have the kitchen being like, go back out there with the sliders. And you're out there. And then if it's something that involves any sort of work, like a toothpick or a dip, you have to stand there while the person's awkwardly
awful.
Dipping. And then they don't know what to do with the garbage. And you're like, just put it in my hand. And then you take it.
It's awful. It's terrible. It's such an awful job to do.
Yeah. And we don't really know what's in the things often either. Like, we don't know the allergens. Which reminds me of this party that Mike and I went to for the Tony Awards, and a friend of ours who has so many allergies was just taking everything. And we're like, what if you poop your pants? He didn't care.
And then we get a conversation of dad friends versus friend friends. And this is all just so that Herbert can tell Harry that he's being sat next to Herbert's mother.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is going to be a nice time.
Sure. And we have more art talk in the Wickham Gallery, where Charlotte used to work back when Banks Thurlow owned it. And then we have a Sonia Sklaroff reference, who is an actual artist. I like that he say Risti is where she discovered her at, and that's the Rhode Island School of Design.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I found out some things. And Harry is introduced to Lawrence Todd, who is a playwright and poet. He founded the Newark Free Theater, which is not an actual thing. Once again, I love the fact and the fiction. I love how we're throwing things in. Some things are real, some things aren't. And, you know, Lawrence was terrified that it would be nothing but bankers and lawyers, which is what it seems to be.
And something interesting I found in this moment is I never really knew why LTW's name was Lisa Todd Wexley. I didn't know if that was her maiden name, and we find out clearly now that it is her maiden name. And I don't know. I'm not going to make a Sweeney Todd reference. That's it.
Okay.
I'm just letting everyone know that I won't be doing that.
So Herbert approaches LTW, who says their friend is in Capri.
Yes. I always thought it was Capri.
Is it a Capri Sun? Was that what I drank when I was a little kid?
No, I think you drank a Capri Sun, but I think that it's a different thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thrown by the Capri.
When I was in my high school production of Grease, did I wear a pair of Capris?
I think you did. You
Capri
have some
Capris pants.
On. And surely you've been tracking the RSVPs on your paper list post, and I'm sure I was, and we find out that he never hit send on the invitations.
Which I have a few problems with already.
Yes.
At the Park Avenue Armory, she says to Charlotte, don't forget about our 20th anniversary party. Now, I understand that Charlotte's one of her closest friends. She sees her all the time. They've probably talked about this party. But Charlotte would probably at some point say, I never got an invitation, or what time does it start, or where is it? And then LTW would have said, oh, it's on the invitation. And then Charlotte would have said, I never got the invitation. Or for a place this nice where you're renting out the whole thing and you're getting food, at some point the restaurant would ask for a head count, in which you would say, here's the headcount.
Yeah, so we're bending over backwards a little bit to make this particular storyline happen. But, you know, now we have a 4-course dinner coming for 31 people, and there are only like 5 or 6 of them there. And it's a problem. But part of me is like, maybe just make the table smaller. Like, you don't actually have to eat all the food. But it's fine. It's funny. It's set up for comedy. And now Mark definitely can't leave, even though he was going to just do a drop by.
Nope. And now we cut to Che, Carrie, Miranda, and Lyle in the bed together. And I noticed they made sure everyone had cups with drinks in it, and Miranda is pouring San Pellegrino in hers. So we're establishing she's still sober.
And they took their wedding very seriously. They were married in Vegas by an Elvis impersonator, both dressed as Elvis. We found out that Janny was dressed as Priscilla. Is that the person's name?
Yep, Janny was dressed as Priscilla, kind of their girlfriend. They were poly pioneers.
And I like the, you know, Carrie, I know what you're thinking. And Carrie being like, really? Because I don't even know what I'm thinking. I also think it's very deliberate that Carrie's a little bit facing away from the rest of the crowd. That you can kind of tell that she doesn't really want to be here.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of strap-on talk happening. Miranda isn't sure about the first time she wore a strap-on. And I wrote, honestly, Miranda, we aren't either. Not sure if you ever got it off. Are you still wearing it, Miranda?
And I love, I mean, I know that we make fun of Carrie for not wanting to have a conversation, but I still love her response of, how am I still in this room?
Yeah.
And we get lots of lobster. And Mother is at the end of the table because it's the only seat with the AC not blasting on it.
And Charlotte sends Harry down to talk to her.
Harry feels like he's done his time, but he's going back in. And we find out that Mark's 10-year-old smuggled a cell phone into camp and is begging to be taken home. And so Charlotte takes the phone away and basically says, you can't respond. As soon as they sense weakness, they go for you. And yeah, Lawrence makes a toast to his daughter.
And her film in Tribeca. No mention of the anniversary.
Yeah. And we kind of go back and forth because now we're back with Miranda and Shay going to bed and Lyle is already there and they're all tired. Let's just go ahead and just go to bed and not worry about it. And back at dinner, we find out that Mark's third wife had a midlife crisis. And there are very few LTWs in the world. So I guess we're just establishing that he's separated from his third wife.
Yes. And that also makes sense because Victor Garber would probably be a little, it would be interesting to have a 10-year-old daughter maybe at his age.
Sure. Yes, that makes sense. And maybe Charlotte should follow LTW's lead and come and work for Victor Garber.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that her kids need her even more these days, and I don't think they do.
No. Rock would love for Charlotte to not be
totally
there. Lily,
fine.
Lily,
yeah,
Lily would 100%. Be like, I'm gonna do my music. Anthony would be a great Manny.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's a good solution here. I hope that this is leading us down the road that I assume it's leading us down. And you know, Mark tries to leave, but dessert is on its way, and this is when we're gonna get this amazing cake that Lisa forgot to order.
And Eunice says she's never forgotten to order the cake because she always made the cake, and when she had children, her priorities changed. And in this moment, I thought that this was all about with Herbert forgetting to hit send, with LTW forgetting to order the cake. It's right after Charlotte says, we can't all be LTW, that it shows that even LTW can't be LTW.
And I wrote, this conversation is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just everyone being awful. And even the dad here. And, you know, part of me is like, yeah, you tell her just because you let your dream wither away. But also, it's an anniversary party. Like, if we can maybe not have, like, a fight at the table. I wrote, and then Lawrence is a dick about Herbert. Oh, right. Because then even, like, calling Herbert out of being like, he doesn't do anything unless there's money in it. And this is when I wanted to, like, bring up the pro bono work. Remember we were working on that?
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Yeah, because Mr. Todd asks, what is it Herbert is doing that doesn't involve profit? And now LTW announces Herbert's run for controller.
So there we go.
There we go. And that'll end well.
Yeah. Now we're in bed with Miranda and Che, and I wrote, I think I know where this is going. Because even just the angle, like you're like ready. Like I'm just ready for like Lyle's little head to pop over the top there.
Yeah. I said Miranda and Che are doing the work in the bed. I like to say doing the work now since Miranda was doing that when Che was on the phone the last time.
Sure.
She said it was some of her best work.
And I just, are we doing this as Lyle appears? But even before that, it's like, are you going to have sex on the bed next to this person who's sleeping? And if you are, maybe you need to make less noise than you're making right now.
Yeah. And Miranda says her visceral reaction is no, and maybe that's just fear of the unknown. I liked this Miranda reaction because I think it's a very Miranda reaction.
I wrote, I'm about to be proud of Miranda three times.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love that her first instinct is like, okay, my instinct is no. But maybe that's just my first instinct because I haven't tried it before. And I don't love Che's response of like, it's getting less hot the more you talk about it, because consent is sexy, Che. So, you know, let her talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was proud of her for being like, all right, let's do this. Like, let's go for it. And then, you know, we do have the three-way conundrum. Not that I've had a ton of them, but it does always feel like it's really a two-way. And then someone's like, how do I, like double Dutch, like, how do I get in there? Which is sort of feels like what's happening here.
Yeah, Miranda decides that her solution is going to mount the Che Lyle mountain and then gets a Charlie
yes.
horse.
So once again, this is my third, and I don't know if the Charlie horse was the actual reason, but I like that she then stops herself. And she's like, nope, this actually isn't me. And she tells them to carry on. She's going to go to the couch. And don't sleep with your head on the downside of the couch. That seems not like a good idea. And Che missed her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they both end up on that little couch, I guess.
Yeah. And I thought at first it was going to be this cute moment where when Che gets on the couch, it evens out. So it's only even when they're together. But no. Plunk. And then we go to Seema calling Carrie to give Carrie the pep talk. And Carrie thinks that maybe Seema's calling to be her wingman for this event. And she's not.
No, because never meet your heroes. Mm-mm. And we arrive at Miranda Priestley's townhouse.
Yes. Do you think that was intentional because they were both editors of Vogue?
I feel like it has to be, right? Like it, because this is the same. Yeah, this is the same townhouse that was used in Devil Wears Prada. And just the advice is don't get any photos taken near women in walkers, which of course is what immediately happens when she walks in the door. Mm-hmm. And she offers to help a lady up the stairs.
And the lady's like, what would make you think I need help?
She's like, do I look like I need help? And Carrie's like, sort of. And I think this is Doris. There's a character of Doris, and it's played by a Doris McCarthy, who is an actress that I looked up. And just for the record, she has 157 credits going all the way back to 1968. But I will say a majority of them are since the year 2013. So I feel like this is a woman who, like, was in the profession at one point, maybe stepped away for a while, and then was like, I'm getting back in, and she works a ton, and I just thought that was admirable.
Yeah, Charlotte, take some advice from Doris and go back to that gallery.
And I wrote Gloria Steinem?
Yeah, she is going to do the thing.
She's going to do the thing. I do like that. And Carrie was the first person that Enid thought of, but we don't get very into this conversation because pretty quickly we see that Bitsy's there.
Well, before that, we see Jane Rosen walk by. Money.
And that's also why Bitsy is there. Bitsy is there through Enid's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. She has deep pockets.
We have a comment that this is the greatest gathering of female minds since Eleanor Roosevelt had dinner alone at the White House. I feel like I know this quote from somewhere else, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So if anyone listening is like, oh, this is from blank, like it's such a familiar quote and I couldn't find it. So if anyone else knows it, please reach out.
Maybe you wrote this episode in a past life.
Maybe I did, yeah. And it's all because Eleanor Roosevelt wasn't a lot of fun. Okay. And let's get seated so we can begin.
Yeah. And then we find out that Bitsy is the one that gave Marlon Carrie's number.
Bitsy was the little birdie, tweet, tweet. And Carrie doesn't think that he's right for her. And we're going to have a really interesting fact drop here.
Yeah.
As she talks about no one can please her like her Bobby. Carrie's head is spinning. And we find out that indeed, Bobby was a homosexual.
Yeah. Have we told them about Home Essential?
I don't know if we have.
Oh, so one time I was listening to a podcast and there was a commercial for one of those comforters or sheets. I don't remember which one it was. And they were reading it and they said, you know, visit blah, blah, blah for all of your Home Essential needs. And for some reason in my brain, it sounded like someone saying homosexual in a fun Southern accent. So now we just say Home Essential. That's just something that we say in our day-to-day life. You're welcome to adopt it. But yeah, Bobby was definitely a Home Essential. And that's why he tried so hard. And I'm really falling in love with Bitsy's character in this.
She was a lot in this scene.
Okay, she's a lot.
She's a little too much in this scene for me.
But when I say I'm falling in love with her character, it doesn't mean like I want this person in my life or that I even think they're relatable. It's just the fact, I just love how kooky she is. I love that she's like, yeah, duh, he was gay, but that's why he tried so hard. And, you know, I still loved him. And then we go on to her talking about how that's probably some unfinished business with her father.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then we find out that Marlon is known as the human tripod.
Which she then feels the need to explain.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
got
yeah,
it.
We know what that means, Bitsy. Yeah. We got it.
I mean, Carrie may not.
Carrie just flees.
Yeah.
No, Carrie knows. She's like, yeah, no, I get what that means.
Yeah.
And Carrie's kind of out of there. And we get to Gloria speaking. And apparently there was a script, but this really was just Gloria speaking. Mm-hmm. That they filmed this over the course of like 3 days, I think they said. And she had a variation on the speech every time. And we sort of get like, this is the way that Miss Magazine started a half a century ago. I like We Live Longer Than Men, which we don't mean to do. And in the midst of all this, Betsy decides to send a dick pic. And I really like Carrie's reaction to all of it, where she's just like, why are you doing this to me?
And I don't know if this was necessarily intentional, but it made sense to me that in this collection of women of a certain age or older women or however the best way to say it is, that no one has their phone silenced.
Yeah.
Like, Bitsy's phone is making all the text typing sounds, and Carrie's phone just dings, which would totally happen, you know?
And we have a pretty quick cut to a handy with Charlotte and Harry, mm-hmm. and happy 4th of July.
Yeah, it's an affirmation handy. It's just like, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. That's their dirty talk in this, is just, I love you over and over again.
And then the toilet flushes, and out comes Gloria Steinem, and I hope she washed her hands, because it was such a quick, like, if you go back and watch it, honestly, the toilet flushes as the door is opening. And I understand yeah. that there is a world, because I've done this before, where you pee, you pull your pants up, you wash your hands, you do everything, you flush the toilet and leave, right? So that is what I'm thinking probably happened. I love the woman that's like, yells at Carrie for standing in the doorway.
This is the same woman, right? This is the one from the stairs. This is Doris. Yeah. Talk or go!
I've waited on Doris many times, I feel.
Yeah, for sure. And we get, you know, a nice little conversation between Carrie and Gloria.
That anyway, there's, like I said, no original way to say this, but so just thank you. Thank you. I have admired you my entire life.
Well, I guess that means we care about the same things.
I would like to think so, yes. No. And I'm not proud to admit, but I almost didn't come today because I thought that maybe I didn't quite belong. I'm afraid I'm still battling my own deep-seated ageism.
We're all battling that, but we are at the age of our minds, yes. not our wombs. Hello?
Yes.
Gloria gets whisked away, and we have Carrie and Edith chatting, and Carrie basically saying, you know, I'd love to write for your magazine. And Edith is very quick to say, oh, that's not why I invited you. I don't want you to write. I want you to give me money.
Yes. So we find out that Edith wants Carrie to donate $100,000. And then in this moment, there's a picture that's going to be taken with Enid and Gloria that kind of cuts this conversation. Enid wants to see.
Well, I like Carrie's response of, if I gave $100,000 to you, I'd have to give $100,000 to everyone. And we get a sense of where this is going.
Right.
Yeah, and then that picture happens. And then, you know, Enid wants to eyeball the photos because she's been, you know, burnt before. And of course,
there we go.
Stumbles upon the dick pic.
Scrolls.
A very familiar, apparently.
Yes. And Enid scrolls and asks Carrie if she is shtupping her boyfriend, which is a Yiddish term.
And, you know, I would never date a man that old. And we say it so that it's awkward, but two things. A, don't say that. B, remember a series ago when you were dating a man who was Enid's age? So, you know, the line was very deliberate and to make it awkward, but I'm also just don't say that.
Yeah.
It was a really silly thing to say. And we kind of have like a let's circle back, and we pretty quickly get to like, hey, how does PayPal work?
Yeah. And just like that, Enid and I became PayPals.
And a quick note on the credit sequence now, because you'll notice we got no Naya in this episode.
No Naya.
But Karen Pittman has that good contract because she's still in the credits, which means she still got paid.
Good for you, Karen Pittman.
So I will say for all, you know, we've talked about this before when we talk about episodes that we do tend to like nitpick and find the little things that we bump up against and, you know, do a podcast on something. And that's sort of what you end up doing, of finding like the little moments that maybe didn't work or the little moments that don't quite make sense. This is my favorite episode of And Just Like That that has ever been.
Same.
Of both seasons. I think this is the best. This for me stands amongst the best episodes of Sex and the City.
I thought it was such a great episode. I actually asked on Instagram to the listeners, you know, what did you think of this episode? And I would say 98% of the people were like, this was fantastic. I loved it. And, you know, it's interesting because I've gone back and watched a few more of episodes of Sex and the City. And I know I've talked about this before, but And Just Like That isn't wildly different in the
it's
style.
It's really not.
Like, we all think like,
not.
Oh my gosh, what is this? This is so weird. What are you doing to these characters? And it's like, no, it's the same. This is what it was. I know this is a really strange thing to say, but I think so much of it is the camera quality is so good now that when you're watching old episodes of Sex and the City, you're able to kind of be transported to a different time. And now with this, it just looks so new and so current that it feels strange, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I think we sort of romanticized the old episodes that were like back when nothing weird happened and everything was glamorous and perfect. And it really, yeah, it's always had that awkwardness. It's always had those strange moments. So yeah, on that, but also, yeah, just loving this episode. I thought it was so good.
I loved it. Yeah.
I enjoyed it so much.
It felt like all of the women were back to themselves in a lot of ways. And I think that they had to lose themselves to get there. And I think that's just life in general. Like, how many times has your friend dated somebody that you didn't necessarily like or wasn't the best for them, and they changed and their personality changed? Or people that, you know, there's things that 10 years ago I was like, absolutely not. And now I'm like, oh, that's not a big deal. You know, so we change as humans. And we have to let these people change too.
Yeah, and I suppose a bit on that note, I couldn't help but wonder, because we didn't really talk about this in the scene, but there is the moment of Lyle explaining his relationship with Che and how Che said they had to push the boundaries of their relationship in order for it to grow. And we do kind of have a flash to Miranda. And it's definitely the idea of Miranda thinking, oh, how far am I going to have to push this relationship to make it work? And so I can't help but wonder if Che still lives in that mind frame, if Che still has the feeling of, well, we're going to need to push this relationship if it's going to succeed and grow. Curious.
Yeah, and I guess I couldn't help but wonder, like, at what point is Richard Burton just going to move out?
Richard Burton's kind of over
it. Yeah, he's like, I have to sit through Lily Eilish, I have to sit through weird sex, I have to sit through Kegels. Like, I gotta go. You make me walk in the rain.
It's a dog's life. Mm-hmm. All right, there we go. Great episode.
Great episode.
Had so much fun.
Would order
again. To see what happens next. Yes, for sure. Next episode, Trick or Treat. So do you think we're gonna flash forward all the way to, do you want to say it?
Halloween?
The Halloween party.
Oh. Stop!
All right. Back next week.
Bye.
Bye. You can subscribe to our new Patreon-only podcast, We Couldn't Help But Wonder, Still Wondering, right now. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. And don't forget to check out my new podcast with Vanya Arslanian, Mike and Vanya Can't Not. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link or tell a friend, take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, stay safe, and let's all take care of each other. We'll be back next week with Trick or Treat.
That's better. For some reason, it's always the clap is like a little off, but okay.
Strange. I don't want to have the clap.
No.
I think it's also funny. Your video is so like, first of all, you're very Blair Witch. You're very like, I'm so sorry. And then like it keeps zooming in on your guitar in the background. Like it has a mind of its own.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why it does that. Like if I move like this, watch.
Yeah.
It like follows me. I don't want it to.
It follows.
I don't think Jackie's relentless. What's the word?
Reluctant?
Yes. I wanted to say relentlessness. I don't think Jackie's reluctant. I don't think Jackie's reluctance to go to breakfast has anything to do with his morning routine.